This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you in a few minutes here, I hope. Rick Wilson will be with us, and we're going to talk about Trump and the possible end of the Trump presidency. In fact, I think there he is. Okay, great. On the line with us is the author of the new book, Everything Trump Touches Dies. The subtitle, A Republican Strategist Gets Real About the Worst President Ever. It's by Rick Wilson. Rick Wilson is a Republican strategist, and his Twitter feed is The Rick Wilson. And Rick, do you have a website? I don't see it here.
It's TheRickWilson.com.
Say it again?
TheRickWilson.com.
TheRickWilson.com. Cool. Rick, you're a Republican strategist and, you know, have been involved in Republican campaigns for years and years. You know the Republican Party. Donald Trump tweeted yesterday that it's just a normal thing to reach out to a foreign government and ask them for help to take down your adversary in a political campaign. Is that true?
You know, Tom, I've been involved in Republican politics for 30 years. And there are a few things I've never done, and one of them is to reach out to a hostile foreign powers representatives to ask them for dirt on an opponent. Because I don't think I can think of anyone, Republican or Democrat, in my history in politics, as I said, for almost 30 years now, who would do that. It's unthinkable. So, of course, that's what the Trump people did. Because it was unthinkable, they decided to go ahead and do it.
So here's the weird coincidence, Rick. On this day in 1974, or yesterday, August 5th, on August 5th, 1974, Richard Nixon, under orders from the Supreme Court, released the White House tapes, which led to the end of his presidency a few months later. On that same day, yesterday, Donald Trump released the apparently truth about this meeting that his son and Jared Kushner and others had with these Russian lawyers and Russian representatives of Russian oligarchs in Trump Tower. Do you think that this is the end of the Trump presidency? I've heard from two sources now that the White House right now is in lockdown, that Trump's travel plans have been canceled, essentially, that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is not going to be holding a press conference today. I mean, all this may change. It's a very fluid situation. But apparently there's like major freakout going on in the White House.
Well, Tom, if you were in the White House, I think you'd be freaked out, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he has exposed his own son to legal jeopardy. That tweet will go down in history as one of these like tweets heard around the world because it had so many levels of bad in it and so many downside consequences to it that I think we're going to look back and say that was a real inflection point where he opened himself up and opened his son up to even greater legal pressure. A lot of this was stuff that Robert Mueller already knew. But thanks for the confirmation, Don. You know, this is a guy who truly doesn't understand the scope of the peril he is in. And so we're ending up in a situation, in my view, that while this may not be the end, this certainly opened up a gigantic chest wound in the Trump administration. And the legal vulnerability they had all along has now been enhanced. You know, it's one of the things I talk about in the book. This is a guy who thinks he is such a genius about negotiation and about the world. And he's lived in this bubble all along of New York, you know, sort of tabloid BS.
Right.
And now that he's hitting the wall of reality, and that part of that wall is named Robert Mueller, he's having a really bad time.
Yeah, it seems. It will take 17 Republicans in the United States Senate to remove Donald Trump from office. That was not a big lift during the Nixon administration when the Republicans, who were big supporters of Richard Nixon just 6 months earlier, realized how corrupt Nixon was and how crazy he was in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this tweet is enough to have pushed him over the top with some number of Republicans in the Senate and possibly 17, or is it going to take a lot more than this?
I think it's actually going to still take more than this, Tom, because this is a party that is basically, it lives in terror of Donald Trump. Mm. He is in many ways a political terrorist for Republican elected officials. They live in mortal fear that he's going to tweet about them or talk about them in a bad way, because the moment that happens, then come the death threats and the craziness and the Fox News coverage about them, and their lives turn, you know, upside down. So he still has a lot of them very much intimidated.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I talked to a member of the Senate a couple days ago. We were having a conversation, and he said, you know, he's a guy who's been publicly supportive, privately skeptical, as many of them are. And he said, you know, he goes, I read what you said about Nixon, and, you know, we stood up there as Republicans in 73 and said, it's a witch hunt, it's the liberal media, And in 74, we lost 49 House seats and 8 Senate seats.
Yep.
And corruption kills, and corruption kills. And that's another thing I've seen in my long career in politics, is that the years where you're perceived to be the corrupt party, right or wrong, you know, in 94, the Democrats, the House bank scandal hurt them terribly with average voters. In 2006, Abramoff and Mark Foley hurt Republicans terribly in 2006 elections. And so that perception, if it becomes that this is the party covering for a corrupt president who is in bed with a Russian, with Russian government officials, I think it could lead downstream consequences that really hurt a lot of the elected folks who think they can get away with it.
We're talking to Republican strategist Rick Wilson. His new book, Everything Trump Touches Dies. Rick, let's talk character for a minute. Michael Flynn, regardless of what you may think of him and his behavior, he had this consulting company that his son was involved with, and the consulting company apparently committed crimes that involved collusion with the Russians and the Republican Party and being in the White House and all this kind of stuff. And when Robert Mueller started sniffing around his son, Michael Flynn Jr., mm-hmm. Michael Flynn came out and said to Mueller, according to numerous press reports, if you're going to take my son down, this is where I draw the line. I will turn myself in. I will confess to whatever you want. I'll turn state's evidence. Just leave my boy alone. Donald Trump, on the other hand, says, oh, you've got some dirt on my son? Well, here's the real evidence. Put him in jail. By the way, I knew nothing about it. What does that tell us about these two men?
Well, look, I mean, Michael Flynn at least proved that for all of his terrible judgment and his flirtations with the Russians, that at least there's some tiny scrap of honor about his family left inside of him. And the best case scenario you can make for that tweet from Donald Trump is that he's just not that bright, and he thought he was going to get his son out of trouble, and he got him into it. But the darkest interpretation is that this is a guy who hates everybody and who will do anything to preserve his own position and freedom and power, and was willing to put his son under the wheels of the bus. That's the dark interpretation. And Trump tends to lend himself to the darker interpretations as a general rule. But this was clearly something that he will regret no matter what. I mean, this is going to make for an awkward family Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, to say the very least. It seems to me that there's probably two major possibilities here with regard to this tweet by Trump. One is that he somehow thought that if he could just put it out there, that would mean that it wasn't, a conspiracy or a crime. It wasn't a cover-up any longer. It's out in the public domain, so it's all good now. That kind of thing, that he just was fundamentally uninformed about the law, okay? That's one possibility. The other possibility is that he doesn't give a rat's ass about the law, that he really and truly believes he's above the law, and if he can just convince enough Americans that they should side with him, that they will prevent him from being impeached, they will prevent the courts from doing their job, or even that he thinks that at some point he needs to stop the law, essentially, and just flip us into an authoritarian dictatorship. Now, I think that's like one of the darkest interpretations, to use your phrase. What are your thoughts on that polarity?
I think there's that Venn diagram, those three circles of that Venn diagram could all overlap.
Yeah.
He could definitely believe the wrong things about the actual statutory impact of his behavior and his confessions. He could definitely believe that he may have done something illegal and can get away with it if he just browbeats people hard enough and rants long enough. And he could definitely believe that, as a president, he is unconstrained by the law. And I think it's pretty clear that Donald Trump is, to say the least, authoritarian curious.
Yeah.
He is a man who loves Putin, loves the strong men of the world, the Dutertes and the Kims and the Z's of the world, and he has a sense of sort of machismo and swagger that his fans may love, but that it's a sense of a different kind of American presidential leadership that leads to a very dark place when it's been tried in millions of other or hundreds of other cases around the world over time. And I think that it's a great danger to our democracy and to our republic if we start letting a president of any party get away with treating the rule of law like it's optional.
Yeah. Republican strategy. I'm sorry, you finish your sentence.
And I think that's one of the most dangerous things about Trump is that the law means nothing if it inconveniences me politically. That's
right.
A bad precedent.
We're talking to Republican strategist Rick Wilson, his new book, Everything Trump Touches Dies. Rick, last question. Typically most of the listeners to my program are Democrats, I'm guessing, or progressives in general. But there are a lot of Republicans who listen, and a lot of them call in and sometimes agree, sometimes disagree. What would you say to those people who have been Republicans for 30 years like you who are not sure what to do now?
Well, I would say this, is that there are a lot of principles in the Republican Party's tradition that we need to get back to. And some of those principles had gotten a little bit lost even before Trump. But the adherence to the rule of law, the actual adherence to the Constitution in ways that sometimes are inconvenient for parts of the Republican base, to return to a sense of real adherence to the rule of law, to get back to the sense that conservatism isn't about social engineering on the right. You know, we object to it on the left, and we should not try to make it about that on the right. We should be a party of limited government, of personal freedom and responsibility, and of the things that have shaped our better traditions.
And not Donald
have
Trump.
To accept this.
Rick Wilson, his book, Everything Trump Touches. Hang on just a second. Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The book is Everything Trump Touches Dies. Rick, thanks so much for being with us, Rick.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
Yeah.
And welcome back. Tazio in Ithaca, New York, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Tazio, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I've had, there's a few people calling in about guns, so I thought I'd call in on the other side.
Okay.
I think we should just, if you have a gun and you're against guns, I think you should just give it away. Give it to the police department or turn it in. I think that's the best way to protest against guns.
So instead of arming ourselves against the armed right-wingers, we should be working toward gun regulation that's going to make it harder for right-wingers to get guns? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think we're stuck in a very awkward place now. I think why we have a lot of bans against assault weapons is because that thing you read about on your show sometimes in the 1960s when the Black Panthers armed themselves with assault weapons to protect
right.
themselves against police, scared the hell out of Reagan, so
yeah.
he banned a lot of weapons.
Yeah, it wasn't assault weapons, by the way, just FYI. It was shotguns, and there was one hunting rifle, and I think a bunch of pistols, but back to you.
Okay. Well, regardless, I think it was a weird thing that they banned, and I think it put us in an awkward place.
Yeah.
And I think working on refining legislation. I'd be fine with banning all assault weapons and pistols.
Oh, yeah. I think we should, frankly, I think we should ban all semi-automatic. We've banned automatic weapons. We should also ban semi-automatic weapons. These are weapons of war and law enforcement, and that's where they should be limited to. Tazio, thank you. Well said. Benjamin, watching Free Speech TV in Madison, Mississippi. Hey, Benjamin, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was going to ask you about is dumb the new racial slur, but I'll let you respond to that later.
I think it is. Trump seems to only call black people dumb.
Oh, yeah, he never called Rosie O'Donnell, Jeff Flake, the guy that does him on Saturday Night Live, none of those people. He never calls them dumb. Robert De Niro, no, you're right. He only does that with black. But anyway, that's not what I was calling about. You had a guest on earlier that said something about only right-wing people do these mass shootings.
I don't think he said only. I mean, we know now that the Vegas shooter, for example, the guy who killed the most people in the last couple of years was a right-wing ideologue and a conspiracy theorist.
Who is that? Who are these right-wing people?
I don't remember his name. The guy who shot up Las Vegas.
No, it's not been proven.
Look it up.
But I can tell you this.
Look it up.
The Columbine students parents were Democrats.
Their parents might have been Democrats, but the kids were certainly right wingers. They loved their Nazis.
The Pulse shooter was Democrat. The Virginia Tech shooter was a Democrat. The
Fort
Hood shooter was a
Democrat. You know, I don't know where you're getting your list from, Benjamin, but I'm not believing it.
You don't think the Muslim that shot up the Fort Hood was a conservative?
I don't know, and you don't know either.
Yes, I do.
How?
Yes, I do. It's been proven.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Go look up the Virginia Tech shooter.
I'm telling you to go look up the Las Vegas shooter, and you're telling me to go look up the Fort Hood shooter.
I've already done it. The guy that shot Gabby Giffords was a Democrat.
Yeah,
the
right.
The Hook shooter was a Democrat.
You know,
the DC
so this tells us what, Benjamin? Let's say that you're right. What does that mean? Anything?
That means that your guy was wrong.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
okay.
Put a pin in it. Benjamin, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. There's a couple of news stories here that I just wanted to bring to your attention, and then I'll get back to your calls. This in today's New York Times, there's a couple of these from today's New York Times that are just shocking, and they're really worthy of our paying attention to. The first is that the American stock market is shrinking. Yes, that's the headline, an article by Jeff Sommer in today's Times, or actually it's August 4th Times, but it's kind of worked its way up to one of the most forwarded stories. He writes, the American stock market has been shrinking. The market is half the size of its mid-1990s peak, and 25% smaller than it was in 1976. Now, you hear me on this program talking all the time about corporate consolidation. Well, media consolidation is a dimension of that. Corporate consolidation, these giant conglomerates basically taking all the money, and it's harder and harder. Speaking as a guy who has started 7 businesses in his life, small businesses, every one of them, started them all from scratch. It has reached the point now where it is damn hard to start a business in America. Why? Because these giant companies, you know, Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act in 1982. We are no longer enforcing this law, and therefore companies are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more powerful, and in the process wiping out their small competitors. In the mid-1990s, there were 8,000 publicly traded companies available in the United States. So if you wanted to invest in a company, you had 8,000 to choose from. Today, or by 2016, there were only 3,600. Today, there's fewer than that. And here's where it gets really shocking. Profits. In 2015, the last year that we've got all the numbers for, the top 200 companies in America by earnings accounted for all of the profits in the stock market. Let me repeat that. The top 200 companies accounted for all of the profits on the stock market. And the remaining 3,281 public listed companies all lost money. That's breathtaking. Meanwhile, older Americans, people over 65 years old, are declaring bankruptcy at rates we have never seen before. This is where we were in 1933, 34, 35, when finally, I guess it was 1935, that FDR rolled out Social Security. And one of the reasons he rolled out Social Security is that, you know, older people were literally dying of starvation, dying of malnutrition-associated illnesses, dying of cold in the winter, dying of heat stroke in the summer. They didn't, poverty was widespread among people over 65. The rate of, this from today's New York Times, Tara Siegel Bernard writing, too little, too late, bankruptcy booms among older Americans. The rate of people 65 and older filing for bankruptcy is 3 times what it was in 1991. That's a 300% increase. Why? Reaganomics. We've gone from 2% in 1999 of people filing for bankruptcy being over 65 to 12.2% now. In fact, they say the aging of the baby boom generation can't explain that increase. So what does explain it? Professor Thorne says the only explanation that makes any sense are structural shifts. What do structural shifts mean? Well, it's very straightforward. People can no longer afford their health care. People don't have the kind of income that they had. Social Security doesn't pay as much as it used to, and now it's taxed thanks to Ronnie Reagan. And they've got 401ks instead of pensions. So people are retiring with less money. They have access to less money. It's harder and harder for them to get resources, and the costs of healthcare have exploded, which is one of the disproportionately high costs for elderly people. We're back where we were in the 30s. I mean, we're back where we were in the 30s with the Dust Bowl, and now we're back in the 30s with older people being destroyed. This is terrible stuff.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And this is why we need to look back to FDR and LBJ's Great Society and say, that's the Democratic Party, and we're going to reinvigorate and reinvent it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Pick up your calls here. Pastor John in New Haven, Connecticut, listening on SiriusXM. Hey, Pastor John, what's up?
Hey, good morning there, my brother Tom. Listen, I want to make 2 points, and I want to ask your opinion on a second point. Number one, only love can cast out hate. Love is the answer.
I agree.
Nonviolence is the answer. We are a democracy, and therefore the way we fight is at the polls. Would you agree with that?
I would. I do.
Now, my second thing is, if I could ask you, in order to protect our election coming up, and I've listened to Malcolm Nance and also Sarah, teens or something like that, where they said that, you know, the Russians might mess up in this election and do things, and they said that we all should vote massively and vote early and vote on paper.
And triple-check that you're still registered to vote, because the Republicans have knocked several million people off the voting rolls nationwide just in the last year.
Yeah, and here's what I'm asking our listeners, if it's okay with you. I'd like us all, in all 50 states, because I can't do it by myself, to call up your Secretary of State and ask them, what are they doing to protect the sanctity of our election, number one. Then number two, call up your elector or your clerk and ask them, do you have a paper ballot, so that we can protect this election? To see, by Trump saying the Russians are helping the Democrats, if the Democrats win, he may say, well, you know what, this election was not valid.
Yeah.
That's a real thing that could happen. And then you could have some real bad things happening.
I think Trump is already trying to set that up, excuse me, where, you know, he's been claiming, you know, Democratic, you know, pardon me, that there's all these, quote, illegal immigrants who are voting and stuff like this, you know, which has been just totally taken apart, disputed, blown up, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, in fact, I think it's the Secretary of State of Maine who was on the Kris Kobach Voting Commission has now come out and said, you know, he sued to get all the documents because they weren't sharing them with him. And
Wow. And
he's come out and said, okay, I've seen all the documents. And not only was Kris Kobach and Donald Trump lying to us all about this stuff, but, you know, they were also trying to conceal their lies from people like me who were also on the commission. So, you know, this is a big deal. Pastor John, thanks for the call. I agree with you. I think that love ultimately conquers all, and I realize it sounds, you know, kind of, oh, you know, airy fairy to say that. No, I don't think so. Mahatma Gandhi was a warrior. Jesus was a warrior. Martin Luther King was a warrior in the best sense. That is, you know, a true agent of change. Chris in Chicago, listening on WCPT. Hey, Chris, what's up?
No, I don't. Hey, if I have something unusual to talk to you about, I have to call Friday, right?
Yeah. Yeah, generally speaking. Well, actually, throughout the summer, we're saying it's anything goes summer, so, you know, until Labor Day.
Oh, okay, I'll call you some other time.
What's your
I want to ask you, now, what about the survivalists and the state militias? When are they, you know, if there's unrest, when do they crawl out of their holes? Who controls them?
What do you mean? What am I missing?
Pardon?
What am I missing here? I think that's already happening. I think, you know, for example, the Las Vegas shooter apparently was one of these survivalists. Adam Lanza's mother, the Newtown shooter, was a survivalist. I mean, I think they're already crawling out of their holes.
Yeah, because, you know, those guys, you know, if you give them a fertile field, they'll be coming out in droves.
Yeah.
I remember Michael Savage was, I couldn't believe that guy was a brutal racist, but he was on the air. He was talking that there's 30 million of those guys, and he can hardly wait till they're mobilized.
Yeah, Michael's still on the air. I don't know that he's a racist. I've spent a fair amount of time listening to Michael Savage, and I've not heard things that I would say were overtly racist. But
he paid a tribute to the white man building the United States.
Did he? Oh my God. I mean, you know, most of these guys, they're masters of dog whistle racism, if nothing else. But I'm. You know, but I don't want to be, you know, getting on my colleagues, particularly when I don't know exactly what they're saying right now. But your question about who controls the state militias and should we worry about the survivalists? Yeah, I think the state militias. The answer to your question is the governors. Each state militia is the governor is essentially the commander in chief of the state militia. So that's the situation. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you, Michael in New York City. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Donald, Tom. Yeah, I'm vacationing right now in Cape Cod, but I'm still listening to you.
Oh, sweet. And
thank you. And to add to what you're saying about Trump and company and these Republicans thinking they're above the law, that you remember that there is a court order, a federal court order, for Trump to reunite the children and the families that he separated through his ridiculous policy. And instead of complying with that law, with that court order, I should say, he's busy attacking the media via Twitter. He's attacking athletes, LeBron James and the NFL. He's attacking minorities and still repeating the BS of immigrants and Mexicans being bad and so forth. And he's rallying up his base, or should I say inciting violence with his base. In the meantime, you got these children. Some of them have gone fiercely sick and ill. There's one report that one of them died while under Trump. And then you have also another incident of, sexual crimes committed.
Yeah, there's actually been multiple incidents of that, Michael.
Multiple incidents. And then what's going on also is that, that Mr. Trump, he's going to say in response that, oh, what about the children? Let the ACLU handle that. So you're turning to the ACLU, your court opponents, to handle the mess that you have made, and defying further the court order that tells you to fix it.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note, Michael, and thanks for bringing the topic up, because I had the story here and I was going to share it with people earlier, and I'm not sure what happened to it. But the federal judge...
They always kept saying, lock her up when it comes to Hillary. Maybe we should be chanting, lock him up.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Benghazi investigation lasted 4 years. The Hillary email investigation lasted 2 years. The number of indictments was zero. So far on the Trump investigation, there have been 36 indictments, if my memory serves me correctly. I just retweeted that. But the point that I was making, Michael, just a moment ago, is that the federal judge who said to Trump today, you must reinstate DACA, he had given him 20 days to say... he had said 20 days ago, he said, you've got 20 days to prove me wrong. I'm telling you to reinstate DACA, and in 20 days, I'm going to make that an absolute firm order unless you can change my mind. And Trump, during those 20 days, did not change his mind. This federal judge was appointed by George W. Bush. He is a conservative Republican, and he has said, Trump blew up DACA in a way that was illegal. It was procedurally illegal, and it was legally illegal. So, I don't think Donald Trump is above the law, and I think that the law is going to catch up with him, frankly. Michael, thank you for the call. We'll see what happens. If it's true that the White House is in lockdown right now, and I haven't seen any, I've seen this on a couple of kind of lefty news sites. I have not yet seen it on the New York Times or the Washington Post. I was just checking the Washington Post a few minutes ago. So, we'll see where this goes. But David in Fort Lauderdale, listening on Sirius XM. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've been meaning to get in touch with you. I sent you a message on Facebook on this, but I've not really heard many people talking about this. So right now, the Democrats are looking like they might roll over and allow Trump to have hearings for a Supreme Court nominee. I'm trying to understand how that's justifiable when you've got potentially... Trump said that during the primaries and during the campaign that Hillary wasn't qualified to be president because she was under federal investigation. Well, there you go. He's under federal investigation. Second, he's about to put somebody on the Supreme Court for a lifetime appointment who could very well be the person who lets him off the hook if he's found guilty on any of these.
Right. This was the point. I predicted Brett Kavanaugh when there were 20 appointees, and then there were 10 appointees, and then there were 5 appointees. At each stage, I said, it's going to be Brett Kavanaugh. He's the one guy out of the original 20 who had come out in public and, in fact, even wrote articles for the law review journals saying that the president cannot be questioned even. Not forget about indicted. He can't be indicted. He can't even be questioned while he's sitting in the White House. And this is a guy who worked with Ken Starr harassing Bill Clinton for years and years.
Right. And what are the Democrats going to do about it? Because they should be boycotting and refusing to participate in the hearing.
I agree. Call Joe Manchin's office. Call Heidi Heitkamp's office.
Yes.
Call Claire McCaskill's office.
They should not be there and give them the time of day. And if they do, then they're complicit in what happens after that, because they should not be having hearings. This guy is potentially facing treasonous charges. How can you put a Supreme Court lifetime nominee on the bench or even give him the day? You know what I mean? Come on, Democrats, wake up.
Yeah, I'm with you. David, thank you for the call. Well said. Jeff in Wallingford, Connecticut. Hey, Jeff, we just have a minute to the break. You got a quick one?
Yeah, it's like the book, The Crash of 2016, is coming to life.
I agree.
The stock market is no longer good. Our job growth is slowed. It's like everything that happened in that book. The one thing the book didn't anticipate was how good Obama would be.
Yeah, yeah. Or the Trump's tax cut, frankly. The tax cut, while it's going to make the crash far worse, and it's going to make the depression that follows it much longer, the tax cut was a stimulus to the economy. And I could just see these guys sitting around, these Republicans, in the White House and whatnot, sitting around saying, "Okay, we're 8 years now into a recovery, or 7 years when Trump came into office. We're 7 years into a recovery. How do we, never in history has it ever gone more than 9 or 10 years. How do we get this out to 11 years past the end of the first term? Well, if we throw a $5 trillion tax cut in here, $1.5 trillion in the first year, that'll juice the economy enough that, everybody will think everything's fine and that's what they did. And, we'll see how long it lasts. I don't think it's going to last out this year. Jeff, excellent point. Thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In about 4 minutes, we'll be checking in with Bob Ney with Talk Media News. Find out what the news of the day is. Stick around. And welcome back. Oh, my. George in Portland. Hey, George, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I just had a thought about the power of the pardon, preserving power, and what mechanisms could Trump employ to delay handing over power should he lose the next election? And how long could that really be drug out? Thank you.
Those are all good questions. Let's go through them one at a time. George, the first question was, again.
Yeah, in not just preserving the power of the pardon, but power in general, and right. Trump's penchant for fake news, and Bill right. Barr said he might just not go. How long could he delay handing over power should he lose the election?
If he loses the election, I think that it would mean that there was popular sentiment in favor of the Democrat who beat him, and I don't think he would be able to stay in the White House after January, whatever the day is for inauguration, the first Tuesday in January.
Okay.
So, I don't think that's going to happen. What was the next one?
The other part of it was, how will we ever know if any pardons in his corporate world of people that have taken a fall for him? I wonder if much of that's gone on. What about Manafort, if he did win the election, those kind of people?
Well, Manafort has not pled guilty for one of two reasons. Either one, they never offered him a plea deal, so he didn't have an opportunity. Or two, he thinks that Trump is going to pardon him. It's got to be one of those two things. And because, who would subject themselves to a trial like this? And I mean, he's functionally facing life imprisonment. The guy's in his mid-60s or even late 60s. And, if he gets a 10 or 20 year sentence, that's it. He's dead in prison. So, this is the kind of stuff that's going to be real interesting. And Rick Gates, if Trump did even imply to Manafort that there was a pardon in the cards, Rick Gates would probably know about it, and he's probably going to testify in Manafort's trial today. So, we'll see what comes out of it.
Yeah, also in that spirit, Don Jr., although he has to be drugged through the mud, the process has to be finalized. He's not looking at anything but a pardon himself. But, hey, great show,
maybe.
Tom, and thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot, George. Good to hear from you. Cleveland, I'm not sure where you are. Where are you calling from, Cleveland?
Clayton, Georgia, Tom.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to know, everything I've read says that Obama did the same thing with immigrants that Trump's doing. He imprisoned children, that he kept their parents. that 24 died. Well, go read the report.
Cleveland, I can tell you for a fact, I don't know what, you know, if you're reading Breitbart or what, but I can tell you for a fact that when asylum seekers presented themselves at the border and said, we are under international law and U.S. law, we are asking for asylum because we fear for our lives in our home country. 100% of those people who did that were granted the ability to seek asylum in the United States. Now, there might have been some people who were coming here for economic reasons, or people coming here who had committed crimes, I mean, beyond crossing the border illegally. And by the way, an asylum seeker crossing the border is not illegal. So these people that Trump are calling, quote, illegals, or, you know, saying that they broke the law, they did not, and they are not. But, you know, that did not happen during the Obama administration. This is a brand new policy. To the best of my knowledge, it's never happened in the history of the United States. I mean, you can protest all you want. I know what I'm talking about, and you're wrong. Here we go. We're hitting a break. We'll be back with Bob Nate with Talk Media News right after this. Stick around. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. Online with us, the author of Sideswiped, Congressman Bob Nay. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, let's start with Iran, if we could, because the sanctions are kicking in today. This is round one. Now, these sanctions will go towards any entity that trades with Iran, dealing in gold, steel, aluminum, coal, any other minerals or metals.
The oil sanctions kick in November, right?
Well, no, there's a second round kicking in November, yes. And that will be based on the oil. And
right.
there are some probably deals going behind the scenes with Saudi Arabia to make up for what Iran is not going to be able to pump. And frankly, Saudi Arabia will gladly do that because it wants Iran in a bad position and would like us actually go to war with Iran. So Saudi Arabia will be very happy to open the spigots.
Interesting.
So to say.
Interesting. What effect do we expect to see from this first round of sanctions? I mean, my understanding was that this was principally going to hit, that there's not that many American companies doing business with Iran anyway. This was principally going to hit European companies, Middle Eastern companies that had opened relations with Iran. But I've also heard that, you know, the EU has been looking for ways to protect European companies. Has any of that come to fruition?
Well, it's going to, because let me just, and I haven't seen this really in press reports, but let me tell you what was the victim of the first round here. 200 passenger jets. That contract has been canceled now. That's one of the first...
Was that Airbus or Boeing or who?
Well, by these sanctions, we'll cancel a contract for 200 license for sales of 200 passenger jets that were going to be used in Iran. Again, passenger jets. Iran has a horrible problem because originally under the Shah, of course, Boeing sold a lot of the jets, and then there weren't parts, and even Bush opened up the ability of Iran to get some parts for humanitarian purposes because, you know, jets literally could just fall out of the sky and kill the average Iranian. So this is, I understand that from one report I saw immediately when this came through today, that cancels the contract for the license for sale of 200 passenger jets.
Wow.
So we know that happened. Here's the other dilemma, because you've asked the right question. What about everybody that started to do business, whether it was China, Russia, a lot of Europe, started to do business because, you know, we obviously undid the sanctions, as did the UN, for Iran to comply with the decrease of their nuclear, you know, abilities and proliferation.
Mm.
Now, all these companies are sitting there. And so the president, with his new sanctions, just round one, not into the oil yet, is going to cause companies that are doing existing businesses, have existing contracts, just like I mentioned with the passenger jets, are going to have a problem because they're going to come under our law, could be sanctioned and arrested, tried in, you know, a criminal court for violation of sanctions.
And lose their business, to lose their ability to do business in and with the United States as well.
Right.
So exactly. Why, you know, say for example, you know, some machine tool company in Germany wants to continue selling machine tools to Iran, but they would also like to be able to continue selling machine tools to the United States.
Right.
Is it possible for them to spin off another company, make it a completely separate entity? You know, Enron had over 700 different companies, and have that entity buy machine tools from them and sell them to Iran, but they could say, this isn't us doing it, this is a separate company.
Well, it's dangerous because President Trump, of course, appoints the Secretary of the Treasury, and Treasury monitors all of these things. If they wanted to, they could make literally a federal case out of it,
right,
and people could go to trial. So do companies really want to take that chance? But this isn't going to be a one or two isolated cases of the passenger jets I just gave you. It's just going to be broad. And when the oil kicks in, it will be massive because, again, all of these were undone in a joint cooperation between the United States and Europe and right, Russia and China.
Bob, you know Iran better than anybody I know. Yes. You speak Farsi. You've been there. You've worked there. You've lived there. Is it possible that when I think it's unlikely with these sanctions, and I'd like to get your opinion on that, but when the oil sanctions kick in November, is it possible that at that point Iran closes the Straits of Hormuz, the United States says, okay, that's it, and we go to war with Iran, Saudi Arabia and Israel get in on the act, and then Russia gets in on the act on behalf of Iran, and suddenly we're in World War III?
Oh, I think that it's a powder keg, and if Iran does react because its economy is going to tank and it will have, you know, severe problems, if Iran reacts with the Strait of Hormuz, which is a narrow strait, with the massive amount of the world's oil supply going, you know how we would love to go to war over oil. And I think it could be a major confrontation, and Saudi Arabia would love it. Of course, they won't put any of their people in jeopardy. We would do that, and Saudi Arabia knows that. We would become their, you know, their puppet in right, this situation. I think it's a powder keg. It has to be watched and has to be taken serious. The other thing here is this, having lived in Iran and with a couple of presidents, Clinton and Bush, you know, and some Democratic members, we provided the ability to try to do back-channel talks when the White House, both administrations, asked us to for mutual needs that both countries have. There was at least a give and take. Look, the clerics are the clerics. They're not good. They don't treat the people right. But then there's progressives and moderates like Rouhani and others over there. And here's the bottom line, Tom. If the Trump administration thinks that they're going to topple or change that government by doing this, all they are doing is allowing the clerics who are living in the 12th century to be able to say, you see what America's doing to you. We're not doing it. They're doing it.
Right. We told you so.
Right. So this does nothing to have regime change over there. In fact, it sets us back, and it sets the Iranian people back, who the vast majority like us and the vast majority want to change in their country.
Right.
I mean, not long ago, they were in the streets protesting their government over there, and now their government's going to be able to, again, blame every single thing right, on Trump and the United States.
Now they'll be in the streets protesting us. Amazing.
Sure.
Bob, what else is going on in the world today? Oh, I'm sorry, well, we're out of time. That was,
okay,
that, but thanks
thank
for the
you,
filling us all in on Iran. I mean, that's a you know, to paraphrase Joe Biden, a BFD. Bob Ney, author of Sideswipe. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. We will be back. Paul Levy's going to drop by. We're going to be talking about quantum physics, science, and spirituality. Let's take a break from Donald Trump for 5 or 10 minutes here. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.